My guest today is famed photographer David Alexander. In his commercial photography career, David photographed the Eagles' Hotel California album cover, as well as the Blues Brothers album covers and their movie poster. And who can forget one of the famous movie posters of all time, The Terminator. But some of the artists for whom he photographed album covers for were Aretha Franklin and Linda Ronstadt, James Taylor and James Brown, even Rod Stewart, Tina Turner, and yes, Lynyrd Skynyrd's Street Survivor cover, as well as the Doobie Brothers, the Steve Miller Band, that's just to name a few. So how's that for a star-studded lineup? But he also photographed movie posters for Bill Murray's Stripes, Richard Pryor live on Sunset Strip, 9 to 5 with Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton, even Fletch with Chevy Chase, and so many others. But David has a brand new book of photographs called Pictures of Time. And this beautiful book looks at the connections, the commonalities, the similarities, and the reflections of people, nature, and the living things around us, which is a major part of our discussion today. So ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome famed photographer David Alexander to the show. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Ward. Thank you for that introduction. I appreciate that.
Well, you're very welcome. I had an incredible, awesome time going through all of the different album covers that you have photographed, as well as the movie posters. But when did you and the camera meet?
Good question. I was in my first year of law school, and I knew right away that law was not the right path for me. It didn't take long. However, I did stay and graduate. But the whole time, I just knew I wasn't going to practice. And sometime in my second year of law school, I was thinking about how much law was wrong for me and what was I going to do with my life. And honestly, the word photography popped up in my head. It was like a neon script sign in pink light. I still see that in my head. And I just said, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. I had never taken a picture. I'd never lifted a camera. I knew nothing about photography, but I just said, that's what I'm going to do. And somewhere along the way, I got a camera in the second year of law school and just started making pictures.
Well, what was your first camera?
It was a Nikon F Photomic. Does that mean anything to you? It was the earliest, I think earliest Nikon that had a built-in meter, built-in light meter. But the light meter did not go through the lens. That came later. It was sort of on top of the camera, separate from the lens. And it was fantastic. I paid $190 for that camera used. And I used it for years. It was fabulous.
Yeah, my father was an amateur photographer. And I mean, I think the camera that I remember the most was a Contax, 35 millimeter. Uh-huh. And at that time, it was one of the top of the line. I don't think you could really kind of gone any too far above it, unless you were going to spend the money for a Hasselblad.
Yeah, right. No, those were great cameras.
Yeah, well, I'm going to grab this, ladies and gentlemen, because many of you are going to recognize one of the most famous album covers of all time. 1976, the Eagles debuted Hotel California, which, believe it or not, is my number one favorite song. Well, David, how did that famous shot happen?
The whole purpose of the album cover photography work was to express the mood and feeling of the song. That was our goal. And we wanted the album cover to feel like Hotel California song. So we were looking for a building in LA that, you know, would maybe express what we were trying to go for. And the manager of the Eagles, Irving Azoff, suggested we look at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And what we did was, guy got a cherry picker. We were on Sunset Boulevard, across the street, and Sunset's a broad street, across the street at rush hour from the hotel. I was 60 feet up in the air, this cherry picker. Honestly, I mean, all the times I'd been in that hotel, I never knew that they had bell towers up there because you'd never saw it when you drove into park. And once we got up in the air, I saw the bell towers, the sun was setting, it was magical. And we knew it was magical. And I had a telephoto lens on my 35 millimeter camera. I pushed the film, this will mean something to old film photographers, I pushed the film three stops so that when we processed it, it would be grainy and give that impressionistic feeling that the photograph has. And it just, it was one of those things that just worked.
And not only did it work, we will remember it forever. But I noticed, I went back with my album, opened it up, started looking at it, and I noticed that the colors of the album cover, as well as the inside of the album jacket, flow very well with the lighting of yellows and oranges. How did you manage to, in a way, match that?
When we set up the inner spread picture, that the interior of the hotel, which was really a seedy apartment, old apartment building in Hollywood that we found, we lit that. We went in the morning, and I lit that. I had the light coming through the window that was sort of natural light to look like daylight, and then lit the interior in the color tones that you're talking about. We lit the entire interior of that, the lobby, really, of this old, was an old hotel, but it had become an apartment building.
So the actual inside photographs of Hotel California is not the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Oh no. They wouldn't allow it anyway, but it wouldn't have worked. I went with Glenn Frey and Don Henley to look at different buildings in Hollywood. We searched those locations together, just the three of us. And we went to a couple of other old Hollywood buildings that didn't work. And then we went at, this was called the Lido Apartments, happened to be just like two blocks from my studio at the time. And we walked in and went, there it is. It just, you could see the history, you could feel the history in that space. But I knew it was going to require a lot of work. And then casting the picture, there were, as I recall, 115 people in that photograph. I put them into position one at a time and set that up. The group of people on the left, were friends of the Eagles, and they were like the pretty people she called friends, and that was really kind of the point of them. And the people like at the counter, those were people I cast, and we dressed them and set them up to be that. There were actually people that I used in other photographs too. I felt like they were my own little repertoire group. They were really fun and totally willing to play any sort of game that I was interested in playing. And then we put all the other people in the photograph, and the lighting, it worked. We placed some people up in the balcony, and if you look carefully, you can see people up in the balcony, and that was it. And I started shooting.
Well, when you have a band like the Eagles, you have five members, and you're having them stand together. For you as a photographer, how do you get the right look, and what do you tell them that when you're photographing them and they're to either maybe they look towards the camera, maybe you want them to look off? I mean, how do you set that tone?
That's a really good question, and it's different with every group and every individual you photograph. This was the Eagles. They were sitting in one of the rooms in the hotel in the back while I was setting up the picture with all of the people. Once we were ready for them, we brought them out, and I'd left that whole center space, which I lit particularly for them. We plugged them in, and you know, they're so natural. They were so naturally themselves. I don't recall I said very much to them. I talked to them a bit, and you know, when we brought them out, I said, you know, to everybody, ladies and gentlemen, here are the Eagles, you know, and they came out. Maybe I don't remember if they got any applause or, you know, I mean, it was really just fun. And I plugged them in and they became themselves. I didn't need to say much, as I recall. It's a long time ago.
Well, I guess with photos like that, you don't have to tell anybody to smile.
Sometimes it's, you know, it's different. Sometimes it takes a lot of work. For example, the Tom Petty album cover that I photographed, You're Gonna Get It, I think it was their second album. You know, it was very similar. I had gone to their show. I'd never seen them. I'd never heard them before, but they were playing in LA. I went to their show and I saw how they lit the stage. There was a particular mood. It was sort of dark with dark tones, and the band was just sort of lit in a way that they glowed. And I thought, well, that's the perfect way to interpret the lighting for these guys when I shoot their cover next week. And so we created lighting that to me reminded me of their show lighting. And they came into the studio and it was really not unlike the Eagles. We just kind of put them into place. Lighting was very particular, and they had to be in certain places, or one might block the light from another one, but they were perfect. And then we just talked, and they expressed themselves. My job, as I saw it when I photographed people, was always to try to get them to reveal something about themselves. I mean, these were often people who'd been photographed, you know, a million times. But to try to get them to reveal something that they'd never shown before. And, you know, and it sometimes would take a lot of work and a lot of time. Sometimes it was very natural. With those two album covers, they were really pretty easy. You know, once everything was set up and figured out, they were pretty easy.
Well, how did you set up the neon light shot with Steve Miller's Abracadabra cover?
Oh man, good for you.
I love that album.
Right. So there were a couple. That's great. It's a great album. First of all, Steve was really a participant. I photographed him a couple of times, and he would be a very creative participant in a shoot, which made it really fun. It was like we were playing together and creating together, you know. So you're talking about the shot where he's holding the guitar. Is that right?
That was
amazing. I give Steve all the credit for that. What we did was this. I blackened the studio. I had a big studio at that time. And we blackened the studio. There was no light so that I could open up the shutter of the camera and Steve could move a light around, and that light was what we would see, and I could leave the shutter open for a long time, and the image wouldn't take in a lot of extraneous light because there was none. And so we positioned Steve where he was standing, and I said, and we had the light on a boom so we could rotate it, and it was a flashlight that I put a red filter on. And we rotated it to Steve, so to his spot. I said, do whatever you want to do with the light, and I'll leave it open. And when you're done, let me know. will then rotate the lights. You have to stay where you are. We'll rotate the light out of there, and I'm going to make an exposure view with strobe lights. And honestly, I didn't know what Steve was doing. He drew that guitar. He drew the musical notes, and that was the, and he never said, "Oh, I'm going to do this. Oh, look at this cool thing." He never called attention to himself. That way, he just did that, and it was breathtaking when we saw that image. I had no idea.
That is so incredible, because I was looking at some of the neon in the background, and I'm thinking, okay, that's probably set up, but how in the world did the guitar happen in the front? Now we all know, which just makes the album cover that much more enjoyable to look at and to study. I also noticed that in contrast with the solo shots of the album cover with Rod Stewart, James Taylor, and even Ricky Nelson, I noticed your effects of light, because I know James Taylor is black and white, and Ricky is a profile shot with the use of dark shadow. But then with Rod Stewart, you had this, it was a soft light, but what did you do, a soft focus on that photo?
That was the sun behind Rod's head. And we shot directly into the sun. So the light filtered around him. We were just out on the street. We just were out taking a walk and making photographs. And there was this moment while we were chatting and, having fun. This moment where Rod was standing there, and I don't recall anything I said. But it was beautiful. And I knew that was going to be the album cover. With Ricky, so one of the things that I did that I think I created at the time was I started lighting with colored lights. I put gels over lights and would blend lights and color together to get different colors that would exist when you blended light colors. And light is not the same thing as pigments. The way light works, there are different colors, different primary colors and secondary colors than with pigments, but we won't go into that. So Ricky, when I think of him as Ricky, because I grew up with him on television, the Nelson Family Show, I lit him from the side where he was facing. I lit him with a purple light. The album cover didn't really print with the way that purple light really glowed on film. It was fabulous, but it was a tough thing to print. And he was just facing this purple light, and then I lit him from the backside with what we call sort of a normal light. With James Taylor, that was every one of these is a story. You can tell me to shut up anytime,
No, I'm listening.
All right. So James Taylor came into my studio by himself. Walked in, no entourage, no manager, no anything, and he had clothes hanging over his shoulder. Just walked in. He sat down in a chair, middle of the studio, the art director, John Kosh, fabulous, incredible, talented art director, and I. We said, we started talking with him, and James said, there's an idea I've always wanted to do for an album cover. And we said, cool. And we had no idea. There was no plan. So we said, well, okay, cool. What's that? And he said, to do a black and white portrait in the style of old Hollywood portrait with that kind of lighting and that kind of feel, which was something I'd spent a lot of time experimenting with anyway. And I thought, fabulous, let's do that. So we agreed, okay, let's do that. And then he said, there's another idea I always wanted to do for an album cover. And that was to have his entire body fill the square of the album cover. And if you have that album, that picture, which took a lot of work and several weeks to figure out technically, that picture is the record sleeve. We had the two pictures, and then there was a question of which one should be the cover and which one should be the sleeve. And the sleeve was printed on hardboard, so it was of the same quality as the album cover. But when you pull the sleeve out, here you had James filling up the square. So the way we did that was we had to build a box where you couldn't see from the perspective of the lens, you couldn't see either the inside of the walls or the outside. So the box had to be on the same angle that the lens looked at it when the lens was set and it was at a specific distance. We ended up building a 3/4-inch plexiglass box that was, James, I'm guessing, 6'2", something like that, very thin at the time, but, you know, tall. And the box was 22.5 inches square. It was square, 22.5 inches on a side at the back. And then to be on the angle of the lens, it was 18.5 inches on a side in the front. So James would get in, squeeze himself in the back at 22 inches. My assistants pushed him forward. And then he would literally, he was right in the front at 18.5 inches square. And you know, I could bang off a couple of shots. And then he'd say, "Get me out of here," because he was squished. And so we'd push him out, he'd get out and loosen himself up, and we'd do it again. We did that a bunch of times. And that's that one of those pictures is the record sleeve. I have a very funny picture that of one of my assistants' hands on top of the box with James in it, where the hand, it's kind of surreal. The hand looks gigantic and he looks small, but it's real. It's pretty funny.
Wow. Well, I've got to ask you about one album cover, which really took me by surprise.
Yeah.
What is the story behind the famous Lynyrd Skynyrd Street Survivor album cover? Because this was the one that was prior to the plane crash.
Right. So I was contacted by his management to, not his management, the group's management, to make a photograph of the band that expressed the band. And they wanted me, they said, their manager said, "I've got this band, they sell 1.5 million albums, but they've never had an album cover that shows, nobody knows who they are, what they look like. And so I want you to really get to know them and make a picture that expresses them." So they sent me their albums and a ton of publicity material. And I got to them, I went back to Florida, hung out with them, got to know them a bit. And I came back and I said to the manager, "Fire." That fire is what comes to me that we could use that would really express the intensity and kind of the character of who these guys are. And everybody agreed. And so we used the set on Universal Studios that the movie The Sting was filmed at. It was these old buildings. And we had a special effects crew of, I had fire set up that they would turn on these gas flames in the windows. You can see that going down. And then we set up an explosion that was, so if you look at that album cover, I don't have it here. If you look at that album cover, there are these flames that really and deeply, sadly, look like they're engulfing Ronnie Van Zant, who's in the center, and Stevie Gaines, who's right next to him. And Stevie, in the picture that they use, which was the right photograph at the time, Stevie had his eyes closed, you know, and honestly looked like he was ascending to heaven. That makes me want to cry when I talk about that. But we set them up, and when the special effects, the guy who was in charge of the special effects team, was standing right next to me. And he said, okay, let me know when you want to turn the flames on and when you want the explosion to go off. So we set everything up. I lit the band and wanted them standing in a row so you really, each one would really be himself. And so we said, okay, you know, we're ready, this, ready to start. And I had cameras set up. I knew this was going to happen fast. I had no idea, however, of how loud that explosion was going to be, how huge the wall of flames would be. The wall of flames were, you know, was like, I don't know, 100, 150 feet high and 75 feet wide, and it lasted just a moment. We had no idea. So we had, I said, okay, let's do it. And he did, and the noise was, and it was like, it was a bomb. And the band flinched, I flinched. I mean, we all like, nobody knew what to expect. So we went, okay, now we know what this is. And then we would set it up and then did it a bunch of times. The band was then, they were composed, they were standing there, they knew what to expect. I didn't flinch again. And what would happen is they turn on the flames in these, you know, old wooden set buildings. And then when they turn them off, because after the explosion, I'd only get off a couple of shots. After the explosion, the buildings were on fire. And then they had a fireman who came out in the middle of the street with a hose and watered down all the flames, put them out. We'd set up, we'd do it again over and over until I was sure that we had the shot.
Now, didn't the record label change the cover of that album after the plane crash?
Yeah, the picture that was on the back cover of the original album was them standing in the street, but it was dark. It was after the special effects crew wrapped up, and I just shot some pictures of them. That was the back cover picture. About a month after the album was released, they had their plane crash, and Ronnie and Stevie and some of the backup singers who were on the plane died, and they pulled the cover with the flames and then put the back cover picture on the front cover going forward.
Wow. I mean, what were your thoughts? I mean, because I guess it was more the fans that probably made a big deal out of that. I mean, was it shocking? I mean, not the plane crash was shocking, but just, I guess the press, or maybe how the fans perceived the original album cover, thinking that it was almost an omen.
Yeah. You know, that was in the days before the internet and there was no social media. So honestly, I had no interaction with fans, and I honestly got no feedback. I had a lot of conversations with people involved. I think I lost a couple of jobs after that because other bands were nervous about me photographing them. And, you know, my job on that was to get to know Lynyrd Skynyrd, which I felt like I did, and to propose an idea and make a photograph that expressed what it was that I got from getting to know them. And I think it made some other bands nervous at the time. That, you know, well, we don't want this guy to photograph us because who knows what'll happen.
Yeah, I think back in the day, a lot of people were superstitious for different reasons. But your list of the movie posters that you've done are literally iconic, as well as the album covers you've done. I mean, the Terminator, Stripes, Richard Pryor, we know the Blues Brothers, Animal House. I guess, what, is it the Terminator that has to be the most famous of all?
Yeah, probably. I didn't photograph anything for Animal House, except I shot a great ad for Animal House.
That's right. That was John Belushi. You're right. It was an ad.
Yeah, and it was a great ad that, anyway, it's a long story, but it was great. We had a lot of fun. I really got to know John pretty well. Terminator was great. The studio said they wanted to make a picture with Arnold, with smoke around him. And I said, you know, I don't think smoke is the way to go. It'll feel like a disco, you know, picture. I said, this is a futuristic story. Let's do something. We'll interpret laser lights and laser beams. And so one of my recently former absolutely brilliant assistants, Nils Israelsson, came back to the studio and cut out. I mean, this was in the days before retouching, before digital. We were shooting film. We had to get our picture on film. And that was the way we worked. And it was a fabulous way to work. Every job had all these technical challenges that you weren't going to be able to fix later on. And so he cut out these strips on black seamless paper that we put red gel over, so we'd have these red laser-looking lights. And my brilliant assistant, Kevin Stapleton, I said to Kevin, I want a light, a really sharp, small light coming directly down on Arnold. I want to bring out his facial features and, you know, the muscles on his body, and want to do a really extreme kind of lighting for that. And Kevin actually built a light, just cut out a really small square of light that we put directly above Arnold. Arnold had to stand in a spot where he really couldn't move forward or backward, or he'd be out of the light. He had to be in exactly the spot that, of course, we marked on the floor. And he's an actor. He knows. He was very good at that. And then we made the picture, and it was great. It had a hot direct light that came down on, didn't filter the light or soften it. That was it, just straight shot.
Was there a difference between photographing, let's say, a recording artist versus actors?
Yeah, actors are a lot of fun. They're actors. Actors become actors when they work with a director, and if they trust you, and that's a big deal. But when they trust you, they'll pretty much do what you want them to do, and they'll work with you, and you can direct them. Musicians, especially in the days when I started, it was like the early 70s, they would be uncomfortable. A lot of them would be uncomfortable being photographed. Actors were, photography made them uncomfortable because they were used to being seen in character, which is like wearing a mask, and cameras would make them nervous because they felt like the camera saw them. And you know, but we'd get over that pretty quickly. but it was a lot. It was interesting, but they were your question is well taken, because they were different, and they had different qualities that I had to work with.
Well, did people like Richard Pryor, Robin Williams, and Chevy Chase, did they make photo shoots last too long?
Well, that's a good question. I can tell you that Robin was the most difficult person I ever photographed, because he was so active and so much fun, and he was so quick with his characterization, the way he expressed himself, that he'd do something and I'd want to be in really close, get close. But by the time I got there, he was now doing something where I wanted his whole body and I'd have to back up. And it was physical working with Robin. He was fantastic. Richard, I photographed Richard Pryor a couple of times. And for the movie poster for Richard Pryor Live on Sunset Strip, was truly one of the most, maybe the most amazing performance that I've ever seen. I said, Richard, you're a giant on Sunset Strip. And I never said another word. And he pantomimed all these characters, like reaching up on his shoulder and like flicking a small person off his, he just did things like I created while, and I was in awe. I shot one roll of film. I knew that every picture was great, that every picture could be used. And I said, that's it. We don't need any more. And so that was a relatively short session, unbelievable performance, unbelievable.
Well, let's talk about this brand new book called Pictures of Time. It's a collection of photographs that focus on shapes and pairings, reflections and rhythm, together and aging. What was the inspiration behind this new work?
The inspiration was the commercial work I had done. That while I was photographing people, it's very intense. I look very closely at the people I photograph, and I started seeing other qualities of life that went deeper and went beyond just what the requirements were for making a record album cover or a movie poster. And once I started to see what I now know to be deeper into life and things that were photographable, I knew that my photography journey was going to take me beyond commercial work. And I knew that my days of doing that wonderful, creative, often incredibly fun work were numbered, because there was something more I had to pursue. And that's really what Pictures of Time is. Pictures of Time is a result of 35 years, or maybe more than 35 years, since I did my last commercial job. And it took all those years of making photographs and seeing and observing the world, where I began to develop the story and my understanding that has evolved into the Pictures of Time book.
Well, there are two photos in the chapter Shape. A husband and wife, they're cuddled together, and the photo next to it is two tree trunks that are actually joined at the root. And I love the comparison. What did those photos convey to you?
You know, the photos in the book show similarities and connections among living things. There are pictures in the everyday world, the world we all live in. Nothing special, nothing set up, the opposite of the commercial work I did. I don't set up anything. I just photograph what I see. And when I saw the way those people were next to each other and the shape they were, and the shape of those tree legs just spoke to me as being the same. And by the same, what I mean is that we're all made up of similar stuff. All living things are, you know, we have our quantum mechanical particles, our molecules, atoms, cells that make us all up. And so it's fundamentally true to me that, of course, we would take on similar shapes. Of course, we would move and act in the same ways. Of course, we would respond to environments in ways where our energy might overlap at various times. And that's really what I see. It's the way I see the world now. And it's an amazing way to see the world. And it's what I'm sharing in the book, Pictures of Time.
Well, there's a very powerful photo. I actually had to spend some time just kind of looking at it. And everyone needs to see this photo. And it's in the chapter called Pairing. And there's a word, intertwined. And there are two couples in this photo. One couple on the left is in love. They're paying attention to one another. Then the other couple on the right is the man looking at his phone. And the woman is actually looking over at the couple that is in love. It's a perfect contrast of how people are living life today, either in the moment or letting a moment pass them by.
Right, right. That's great insight. Yeah. Yeah. That photograph was made in the Tuileries garden in Paris. And I was, those people in that arrangement, you know, if I could have cast a picture and directed a picture, it could, to try to do that, I could never have come close to how, to me, how perfect that image is. The people on the left, they're enjoying a sexual moment. That's certainly, and they're giggling, and the guy in the middle, busy on his cell phone, you know, and the woman on the other side, and she's giving a look to the couple who are engaged with each other. And I am, yeah, I don't know, maybe 20 feet in front of them. Just this guy crouched down with a camera, and none of them are looking at me. None of them are, you know, it's, you know, and we're out in public. It's the, you know, this gigantic, amazing garden area in Paris. And I'm making photographs saying to myself, which I do a lot, wow, this is unbelievable. And interesting that you would zero in on that picture. That's amazing. That's an amazing picture, I think.
It is, and it's the woman that's looking at the couple, because you can tell she's thinking, I want that.
Ooh.
That's what's missing in my life. Uh-huh. You know? And that's why that picture is so powerful, because I can see a picture like that hanging on the wall, in which, you know, it'd be the type of photograph that would remind us all, well, to stop looking at our phones and enjoy the life around us, enjoy the people that are around us. Right. And it was probably one of my favorite photos in your brand new book. You also have a chapter on reflection. And you showed where nature is showcasing human sexuality. I mean, yes, you know, nature is all about reproduction, and it's a beautiful series of photos. What gave you that idea?
You know, it was the experience. Again, it's, for me, it's the wow factor of, as I started photographing more intimately with flowers, just the inherent sexuality and sensuality of flowers, you know. And then you read a little bit about them, and you read that's what they're about. They attract bees, and it is a kind of sexual attraction that nature has created. But I, you know, started seeing these amazing sensual shapes, and, you know, and it would have been really easy and obvious to include people in some sort of sexual way in that chapter, but that seemed so obvious and boring to me that, you know, that looking at the flowers, and there's a tree and a couple of trees that in that chapter that come together in sensual ways too. I mean, it's, you know, it's life, just like you said. You know, it's all about reproduction. It's all about staying alive, really.
It is.
And the beauty, the natural beauty of all that is everywhere. And most of it, and I think like a lot of the pictures in the book, are pictures that most photographers wouldn't take. They're really ordinary moments. There's one page where there's a guy with a cowboy hat sitting on a bench, and his leg is stretched out. Well, that, I look at that and I just go, wow, this is so, you know, perfect, excuse me, perfectly expressive of a certain type of person. He, you know, and that so many of the pictures, you know, that's what I saw when I was photographing the commercial work, was that if you look closely at people doing natural things, they're revealing themselves, and they're revealing something that's deeper about life if you just look closely. And that's you know, that it's everywhere around us all the time. And it's pretty amazing. I'm, you know, I'm 80 years old now. And, you know, I'm like more excited and more passionate about photography than I've ever been. This new work is just, I feel like I'm learning. I learn from my photographs. I study them sometimes for weeks or months before I really begin to understand them.
Well, you have a chapter called Rhythm, and there's a photo in there that I really looked at, and it got me to thinking, because you have a photo of a flock of birds, which is, the photo's a little bit Alfred Hitchcockish, but you know, for those of you who've ever seen the movie The Birds, but it screams rhythm, because when I looked at it, I had to think about these types of birds, because you know, there's certain types of year when we see all of these birds gather together. Maybe they're on electrical lines, telephone lines, on poles, but then they leave and scatter all at once. But they're scattered, but then they come into this flight pattern rhythm where they're creating these moving shapes in the skies. And I went, that's the rhythm. Right. And that's another photo that I really liked, because I could see where you were going with that, because in the beginning of birds leaving, let's say an electrical line, they're scattered, but then they create an instant shape. But that shape continues to move in a rhythm that, right, if we're looking up into the sky, we actually stop to enjoy what they're doing.
Right, right. It's just amazing. There are, for my next book, which I'm about 70% done with the photography of, there will be a lot of pictures of birds, different birds. And, you know, what you see, what you just described, like when they're taking off from a telephone line, you're seeing what looks like chaos for a moment. And then that chaos becomes order. And they never bump into each other. And even when you see a murmuration of starlings, where you have thousands of birds all together flying in these unbelievable formations, they never bump into each other either. You know, it's pretty amazing. It makes me think of, you know, people in New York City walking to work, you know, at the busy times, you know, crowded on the sidewalk moving together, but they're not bumping into each other. You know, occasionally you rub into someone and, oh, I'm sorry, you know, but for the most part, you know, it's pretty amazing. Just living things, being, you know, following our natural instincts, being ourselves.
Well, pretty incredible. Yeah, I completely agree. And there's a photo in your book, and I really love this photo because it allowed me to look at different variations of people. You have four people in front of the Mona Lisa. You have a couple taking a selfie, which they're trying to capture the Mona Lisa behind them so they can show all their friends on Facebook or Instagram that they're in, that they're on vacation and there's the Mona Lisa behind them. Then you have one man who seems to just want to take a rest in the center of them. And then there's another man facing the Mona Lisa to study her. And what impressed me was one photo, three different reactions. What's the rhythm in this photo?
Yeah, well, that you just described it to me. I mean, you know, it's that same thing. It's like, here are these people basically standing next to each other and in the middle of, you know, Mona Lisa's a rock star and, you know, she's got groupies and the groupies are there every day in masses and, you know, and they're, you know, taking selfies or taking pictures of the painting. And here are these people and I feel, you know, the interaction, the movement there and the relationship. You know, the couple on the left in that picture where I can't remember if it's the guy or the woman holding up the camera, but you see the smile through the arm in the camera. And, you know, that these people are all, they're sharing space and they're sharing a moment. In fact, recently I did a kind of fast look through the book. And which I had never done because I just turned the pages and I looked and I realized that for me anyway, I think almost all the pictures in the book express what I will call dance, that there's movement and motion and rhythm. I mean, they're in different chapters, they're organized differently to try to make sense out of these disparate pictures. But there is rhythm and movement throughout the book. And, you know, and I don't know if that means that's how I see life, all of life. It can be a tree, it can be a weed, doesn't matter. To me, it's everything living is really the same. I photograph things from the same perspective. But there is rhythm and motion, even in, you know, a tree that's stationary. And that's, so I don't know if that's what really is life is about, or if that's just how I see it. I'll answer that question as the years go on, I suppose.
Well, you have a photo which is very Norman Rockwell-ish, and it's in the chapter Together. And I love this photo because I want to know how you were able to capture this moment. Uh-huh. It's the photo of the older ladies at the table with the younger ladies outside the window.
Right.
How did you capture that?
You know, I love that picture. I've got a huge print of that on my wall. I was sitting in the cafe where the women are, and they're having, you know, these three women are together. They clearly have had a long relationship and they probably gathered like this before. And they're just in this intense conversation. They're right next to the window and outside the window, you know, not a foot and a half away, 2 feet, are this other group of women who are responding to something down the street. And the interaction of the women at the table where they're in an intense moment and the women outside the window, again, you know, very close, they're intense and they're in something too. And it's surreal in that they're so close to each other, living in entirely different worlds. I was sitting at the cafe, excuse me, at a table, just photographing these women. Again, like those people in the Tuileries Park, they never looked at me. Here's this guy sitting at a table. This was for a long time. There was a lot that went on. I have a series of these women interacting and different stuff going on outside the window. But I was just fascinated by them. And the light coming through the window, the way they're lit and they're glowing and it's beautiful. And they clearly are so connected to each other. It's, you know, I love the feeling of the relationship among them. And same thing with the women outside, who, you know, a younger version of these women, you know, maybe, you know, 30, 40 years younger. But they clearly are connected too. Love that.
I've got the perfect question for you, since you're a photographer. There's a photo of four girls and three of them are on their phones.
Right.
When should we take a picture and capture a moment? And when should we lay down our camera phones and live in the moment to create a lasting memory?
Yeah, right. Well, we're all living our own lives, aren't we? And right now, boy, phones and, you know, last week I was in New Orleans. There was a music festival there, and I was photographing people for the next book. And everywhere you go, they're pulling up their phones. And, you know, I actually have one really great picture of three people each near each other in different directions, holding up their phones. It's just a behavior that people are doing now. You know, what question I ask myself is, what do they do with all these pictures? You know, are they making albums? Are they showing them to other people? Do they edit them? You know, who knows? I mean, you know, it is a moment right now that where everybody seems to be doing that. And, in a sense, I love it. You know, I love that photography is my language. That's the language in which I feel like I express myself most clearly. And that's what Pictures of Time really is. It's my story, maybe an autobiography, who knows. But, so I love photography. I love seeing people being excited about taking pictures, what they're about, you know. And I think your point, if I understand the subtext of what you're saying, is they're not in the experience. They're busy with their screen. And meantime, they're not present wherever they are or whatever is going on around them. Are they missing life? Is life going by while they're busy on their phones? You know, all valid questions, aren't they?
Yes. Well, you know, my daughter has the Sony A6000. Why did you choose to use this particular camera for these photographs and Pictures of Time?
I like the size of it. I didn't need the full frame, that tight image. If I was shooting commercial work, I would have, you know, the latest and greatest full frame, this and that. I feel like this camera, which is small, I love the way it feels. I only just 2 weeks ago upgraded or changed because my other camera, my A6000s, are getting pretty used. I got the A6700, which is the, you know, it's got some new features. It's basically the same size. I feel a bit like Cartier-Bresson, who photographed with 35 millimeter, did unbelievable work in his time in the, what, 40s and 50s. Well, you know, other photographers are shooting with their Rolleiflexes or their larger format cameras. So I feel like, you know, like the Hotel California album cover, I'm shooting, you know, basically 35 millimeter compared to people who might have larger, you know, cameras with a larger format.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, David Alexander's new book, Pictures of Time, is a timeless collection of photographs. There are pictures of people, trees, and flowers in similar or familiar shapes. There are pictures of groupings of people, trees, and flowers organized into related configurations. There are flowers and trees that reflect sexuality, plants and people in similar rhythmic forms, plants and people and birds paired in related ways, even flowers and trees aging in ways that are all familiar to us. The Pictures of Time book looks at these connections, these commonalities, similarities and reflections, and this sameness that reveal time in living things. The book is available right now on Amazon, or just go to time.com to purchase the beautiful collection of photographs by David Alexander. And David, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Ward. It's great talking to you. I really appreciate it. Let me just say that the website is picturesoftime.com.
Ah, picturesoftime.com. I'm glad you said that. Maybe I misread the publicist's note, but so ladies and gentlemen, let's correct that again. So you either go to Amazon or go to picturesoftime.com to purchase this beautiful collection of photographs by the one and only David Alexander. I hope you have enjoyed your time today.
Thank you, Ward. It's really, really been a pleasure. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And I can't wait to see your next work and see what you come up with. And again, ladies and gentlemen, this is a book. David, if you have that book right next to you, could you show everybody actually how big that book is? It's the size of the album cover.
It comes in two sizes. This is the large size. It's 12 by 12 inches.
I see it. I love it.
Smaller size is, this one has some notes in it. Smaller size is 8.5 inches square. And you can buy it in either size. The larger size is, I prefer that.
But do you, on picturesoftime.com, do you offer autograph copies?
No.
Just checking.
Should I?
I don't know. You could probably charge more.
I haven't thought about that. But I will think about that. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And again, ladies and gentlemen, this is an absolute beautiful collection of photographs. And again, picturesoftime.com. That's the place where you need to go to get this amazing book. I know so many of his movie posters and album covers. I have many of those albums in my collection. And you never know. Here's what you do. Grab a camera, even if it's your phone, and start looking at life in a different way. Maybe stop taking all the selfies and start going outside. And maybe there's a leaf that speaks to you. Maybe there's bark on a tree, or maybe you see a butterfly or a bumblebee on the petal of a flower. Those things can make not only incredible photographs, but even some excellent memories as well. And you may fall in love with photography in a whole different way, just like David Alexander. So for all of you watching and listening, I want to thank you for spending time with us today, and I'll see you next time.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Ward. Take care.
Thank you.